This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 1st of November, 1955. The title of this lecture is Improvement in Technology. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Okay, this is the second morning lecture of the 1st of November, 1955, 4th London, ACC. As usual in any ACC, a great deal of concentrated attention and shifting of attention on Scientology has produced a better understanding of the subject itself. It is almost impossible to write anything about Scientology or to give talks about Scientology without verifying the understanding of life. This is not true that one can understand Scientology. A greater reality, and in creating that greater reality, you of course produce more understanding, and the communication itself, being at work on the subject, naturally results in a clarification of the subject. And so we not only start an ACC with a new set of processes, but halfway through an ACC, we get a glimmering of a whole new rack of processes. This is a very hopeful thing for this reason. We look at any time period of Dianetics or Scientology and compare it to any later time or period, and we discover that we have improved results, improved the outlook, and have improved in general the ability of the person to use the subject. And we of course are prone to say in any present time, this is it, you see. Well, the funny part of it is we were perfectly entitled to say any time here in the last couple of years, this is it, you see. And we could have gone off and loafed, and that would have been all right. But as some of us were saying last night, when we started the clinic in London, we got nothing but the hung fire, tough cases, really. And having gotten these cases, we discovered the same thing that we had discovered before, that we no more than discover ourselves able to reach to a certain low level of case than we some lower levels turn up. And as a result, we actually did this great oddity. We shut down a clinic right here in London because we did not feel that we were cracking these low-level cases, did not have all the technology, or we didn't have all of the practice necessary to continue to operate a clinic on nothing but tough cases. Get the idea? If an easy one or two had walked in off the street, this had been a different thing. But we had nothing but tough ones, and we were being asked to crack these cases in about 25 hours. Furthermore, we had discovered that this was rough right from the outset, because the only people that would come into that clinic and put down money for processing were actually people who had already had a little processing and still had hope but hadn't had results. Our technology was wanting. That was a year or two ago, something like that. I guess that's not as long ago as that. However, we faced the same problem in the U.S., and we faced it and faced up to it and knew very well that we were getting a tough level of case, but we had the incentive there, and I did advance the technology sufficiently to take care of the majority of the cases that were coming in there. This experiment in London of opening a clinic of this character and so forth was simply an experiment, and the experiment was brought to an end to a marked degree because we found out that we were not cutting it in 25 hours. Now, we have found something quite interesting in that line, just as an aside here, that if you sell two blocks of processing, you're generally safe for the case that is today with today's technologies. For the case that looks pretty tough, you never want to sell them any less than 75 hours of processing. Always sell them that much. And for a case that looks fairly routine and so forth, sell them 25 hours. But don't sell anybody any less or any more, and don't sell anybody, oddly enough, 50 hours. This is a curiosity. But we are winning in Washington because we are selling either 25 or 75. And if the person who we think should have 75 hours, which is three intensives, doesn't want to take three intensives, we don't want the preclear. And we simply say, no, no, sorry, tough. That's all. You need 75 hours. That's the way we look at it. And we won't give you 25 hours of processing, much less give you one or two. We won't give you that. You just can't have it. That's all. Too bad. And the usual thing about it is they don't drive away. They face up to the reality of the fact that it may take a little time to get a significant improvement in the case. And so they do, I think, to date, have always taken the 75 hours. Now, 25 hours, that would be a case in pretty good shape. On your graphs, that would be a case that was at least partly in the normal curve and not too far away from it the rest of the way. See, part of it in fine shape and the rest of it not too bad a shape. 75-hour case is mostly out of the normal curve in some wild direction or another. We'll know more about that when we show you something about psychometrics. All right. As we look this over, we discover then that the auditor does require something to tip him off. It isn't enough simply to look at the person. It isn't enough to talk to him. Because we sometimes find this great oddity. The person is on the qui vive. He's very much alive on this Friday that he is enrolling for next Monday, you see, to take his intensive. See? He's in pretty good shape, you know. He's just full of hope and ginger and everything looks okay and so on. And they're talking and they're real sharp and right up there and so forth. And Monday when they come in, we say, all right, now, Mr. Jones, now, what are we doing here? And he says, well, I don't know, calm-like. You say, oh. Now, let's see. Let's take a look and let's check him over a little bit. Just shut your eyes there. Now, how things seem to you? Oh, well, they're as black as usual. And this could happen. This could happen. You could make some slight misestimate of a case and consider that a case which was really pretty rough was not very rough. These are sleepers, we call them. They come along and evidently what you're going to audit isn't alive at the moment you're looking at them. And then it wakens up right away that you say, now I am the auditor. This is a very curious manifestation. Had a very good-looking young man. He was just a fine-looking young fellow. He was one of the best-looking young men I've seen in many a day. He looked healthy and everything about him, he just seemed just swell. And, brother, he was 8 miles south of zero when it came to getting audited. We don't know whose valence he was in, but it was an awfully nice valence, only he didn't have anything to do with it. This is one of these sleepers. And the case woke up and became a case in the first hour of auditing. I had this fellow myself personally in my own little lily-white hands. And I conceived that my hands were going to get a little bit grimy before the five-hour intensive. I generally give intensives in 1 hour per day for 5 days. And this is a fantastic way to go about it, but to make any gain across this line is very funny. But I usually make the same gain as the clinic makes in 25. I'm not bragging. It's just the fact that it's probably the fact that 5 hours of processing spaced over 5 days could be close to as gainful as 25 hours spaced over 5 days. In other words, there may be some coordinative factor. No other test has been made in it. The other thing that happens when I audit somebody is I audit him directly and try to snap him out of it and put him into the groove so he does a little bit better. Don't fool around with him very much. And nevertheless, this one happened to me. And I was astonished. I hadn't taken a good look at him when I'd first put him in there for processing, you see. So I simply ran a process on him for those 5 hours and registered it as a result. I was rather astonished when there was any change in the case at all, since there shouldn't have been any change in the case in 190 hours of processing. He was not there. He was not functional. His power of choice was zero. When I asked him to walk across the room and discover whether or not there were any barriers between him and the opposite corner, he stopped every couple of inches and felt with his hands in front of him. And then turned around and told me that there were eight. Which turned out to be the eight dynamics. Anyway, it was a very interesting thing. But here we have these two blocks of processing. It doesn't seem to matter much how we vary the processes. We simply are doing more in the two frames of reference, you see. We don't care how high a case tests at the end of an intensive. And if the processes are better, then the case tests higher. But the safe thing to do is to sell them always an adequacy of processing. The reason why is, as we have discovered, you will always wind up giving them an adequacy of processing anyway. Got that? So you just might as well charge them for it right at the outset. And if they say, no, 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 and I can't do that, and you say, well, here's the address of a couple of auditors that read a book once. And they're not certified, but they should be. And they mix this up with Yogi. And why don't you go out to Brighton or some such place? That's nobody. I don't even know any auditors in Brighton. And you go ahead. But actually, I don't think that anybody around will do any better for you. And if we were hung together well and smoothly and without frown at any time on a professional basis, which we should be, we ought to be in good ARC with each other. We speak each other's language, not only in Scientology, but in life. We, of course, would make it jolly well difficult for some case that ought to have three intensives to get anything else but three intensives. You got the idea? So much so that it would be of great benefit and would save every auditor in an area an enormous amount of grief and trouble if, when a person applied, we simply put them on the roster. It's a private, very confidential roster available to auditors only, maybe kept in the HCO or some such thing. You just forward a report in, just ordinary report form, and we always fill in the report form. You get the idea? And we always fill it in, and we keep a little file on PCs, and we would keep ourselves individually and collectively from getting fouled up. Somebody came in, and we said, well, we know something about this case, you see, and the case has already had some auditing, and the case is quite resistant. It's going to take about 75 hours to do anything for this case. The case has so far been relatively unappreciative and has changed auditors a couple of times. And maybe we know this, you know. And we simply put this down as a fact, and we told this person they had to have 75 hours, and they said, no, I want 3 hours, and that's all I want, and that's all we can do anything for. And we said, well, we're going to sell this guy 3 hours worth of processing when he's going to be hanging on our doorstep for the 75 anyhow. How cheap can we get, and how many pre-clears of our own can we turn aside and disrupt the processing of? See? It's a question of time, availability, and a lot of other things. And if we simply made a note to that effect and forwarded it to the central file, we don't care who has this central file or what, somebody would immediately say, well, that could be used to procure pre-clears for this one or that. No, it would have to be proofed against this sort of thing. We could then phone up and say, we could send in the report, and just in normal course of human events. But before we did this, if this file were available, somebody could call up, you could call up, and say, Miss Jessiper is here, and want to know if whose preclear this is, or if this person's ever applied before. And the central file says, we have no report on a Miss Jessiper, and there is nothing here of any kind. You say, well, that's all right, then. That's fine. But Miss Jessiper is this way and that way, and doesn't want any adequate amount of auditing. Won't buy any adequate amount of auditing. Well, Central File says, just make out your report for him and send it in. All right, a few days go by, and we get another interview and another interview and another interview. We would learn an interesting thing. We'd learn an interesting thing, that there were certain people around who were utilizing a tremendous amount of auditor time and were making an awful lot of commotion. And we would learn that we had this in common with every healing organization represented. And we would learn that these are ordinarily the failed patients of other groups and are standard failing patients. You get the idea? They're just standard. That's their standard behavior pattern. For instance, you want to know how your time gets eaten into. A gentleman who was a pre-clear of a Hazy auditor, one of us guys, you know, I mean, just one of your pre-clears, started haunting my doorstep about another case, one to which he was related very intimately. He just started haunting me. And I could not turn around without running into this man. So I got a little bit curious, and I asked a couple of other chaps who are very noted in the field of healing in Great Britain if they knew him. Boy, did they know him. Mm. Oh, man. See? This guy had burned up more time for them. He'd used up more energy for less, and had gotten less distance. And it was always on an emergency basis, and it had to be at 2 o'clock in the morning, and there had to be unusual major staking. In other words, this fellow was very disruptive in the field of healing. Now, we discover such a person, and if we look carefully, this is a lesson that is so well learned by me that it would be surprising. It's something to me that I mention it to you, but I know this is not entirely known to you. That in the vicinity of such a person, there is unrest and in turbulence. And the contact with that person then starts to spread this sphere of in turbulence, you see. And it just gets bigger and bigger and broader and broader. And almost anybody in that person's family will add to this in turbulence. I have seen a central organizational staff tied up and unable to work for 2.5 weeks because of such a person. And when I finally found out why nobody's memos were coming through, why nothing was happening on this line or that line, why communication lines had broken down everywhere around here, I finally found out it was this person, why I shot him from guns. You know what was happening? This person had to have special treatment, special care. It all had to be very, very special. And somebody was foolish enough to let the person through the gate on an inadequate number of hours of auditing. And thereafter, everybody was in trouble. The person was given this number of hours of auditing. The case started to break. Well, the case started to break. Where did it go from there? Well, it went to an end, that's where. As far as the auditor was concerned, but as far as the organization was concerned, why, everybody had to pick up this ball one way or the other, and it was racking from here to there, and this person had other persons who came in to agitate because the bargain hadn't been kept, you know, and then there was a lot of yak about the amount of cash which should be refunded. You see, you get the idea. Just everything starts to tumble, see, one way or the other. Actually, nobody had done anything wrong as we looked through this except the person for processing in the first place without adequate time and facilities. Had we had adequate time and facilities to process this individual, this would have been a very easy thing, you see. But we did not have proper quarters because this person was a screamer. We did not have enough information. Actually, I knew nothing about the case, and on the day the people of this person walked into the registrar's desk, we had somebody subbing in as registrar. And the regular registrar wasn't there. Furthermore, the testing agent, that is to say the person who did the testing, was out of pace that week, and this was not the exact time of the week to do the testing, so the person was not tested. So we had signed somebody on without psychometrics for an inadequate number of hours of processing with no adequate facilities with which to give this processing, and everything from there on went wrong. We did everything wrong right at the beginning. Now, the things you can do wrong are accept a person for processing who may require special quarters or facilities, who may require care during processing. This would include a severely ill invalid. It would include a person with a psychotic history and so forth. See, such a person. Inadequate facilities. Actually, such facilities are available in some hospitals, are available in sanatoriums, you see, but aren't available to the usual audit. Trying to keep such a person in a hotel with an attendant is just asking for it. Just asking for it. Just from amount of trouble, not authorities, you know. Just from trouble to you. Because it all starts going wrong right from that moment there on. The landlord will probably be in contact with you, and the guests will be all complaining, and this and that will start happening, and it's just not the person you should have your finger on at that moment. Now, the person came from somewhere, and that somewhere had facilities to handle this person, and the best thing to do if you haven't got facilities is send them back to that somewhere they came from. You get the idea? And if an auditor can be provided on an adequacy of hours or a patch-up to audit them in that vicinity from which they came, all right. But you might ask yourself why healing professions provide themselves with such facilities. It's because they're necessary. That's one of the most obviously stupid sort of remarks you could make. They provide themselves with hospitals and sanitariums because they're necessary. And if you don't have hospitals and sanitariums at your beck and call as an auditor, you have no business taking anybody who is acutely ill or insane. Now, you either keep them under the people that have already been treating them and get their permission to do something for them on their authority at the specific written request of their people or the healer in charge of the case, you see, or you just leave them alone. I know your sympathy, your confidence, and many other things will invite you to overstep such a line. But if the Hazi and everybody in it, every person in it, can get involved in all directions because of the conduct of such a case. Think of a lone auditor sitting in North Hampshire or someplace with one of these on the back of his neck. It happened once to a fellow sitting all by himself in a town without any other auditors. He and his wife were both practicing well, and they were doing fine. They had a nice practice, and one of these chaps came along who should have been retained by his family in the facilities where he was being cared for, you'll see. And he was disrupted from that area and dumped practically on the front door of this auditor. And you know what happened? Their practice went completely to pieces and was never reestablished thereafter. That's the most significant thing that occurred. In other words, an awful lot of people were denied Scientology because this happened. But the wilder aspects of it just defy description. This man had an institutional history which went back for 15 years, and these people had, this auditor had never investigated it, and his confidence in himself was misplaced. You see? Because here was just the physical aspect of a body with probably no thetan. And here's this weird thing of this body completely out of control and no facilities whatsoever to take care of it and no relief. There was nobody to spell this chap. He and his wife were Scientologists, you understand, but she could not process him. So he just was standing by. 3 months they went through this. It was practically the end of Scientology as well as their practice. And certainly, to this day, Scientology has made, if anything, a very feeble regain in that small town. What happened? They simply took a person who should have been retained in the area where he was originally, and they took this person, accepted him out of that area, and without facilities to take care of him, an inadequate inquiry as to his antecedents, no psychometric battery, nothing to tip him off, and at the moment when they first accepted, the fellow looked relatively sane. He was wearing his head on straight, which is, I guess, about the only thing that could have been right with him at the moment. And everything went to the dickens thereafter, and that was the end of that. That was the end of the Scientologist, really. This fellow's never really gotten back on his feet. He's always afraid, I guess, of another one dumping on his front doorstep. But there's a case he didn't solve. He didn't ever come to grips with the case. At no time did he ever really come to grips with this case as a Scientologist. He was to grips with this case as a sanitarium director without a sanitarium. Where did Scientology come in here? Frankly, no place, you see. Here was an auditor trying to act in a private domicile as a sanitarium director and special attendant and chief nurse. And it just didn't function. He thought at first that he could get attendance, somebody to take care of him. But the family pulled out and pulled the attendant out too that was taking care of the person, and that was that. You see what havoc could result from this. Well, now it's not a question of Scientology there. It's not a question of technique, not a question of anything. It's a question of facilities, attendant, and here we sacrificed the good cases and the progress that was being made in the area for just one spinner. And the funny part of it is, which we have long learned in healing, is that an individual who is in an interbulated state generally has a family that's in an interbulated state. And it's one of the maxims in Hazi clinics in the States that we process the relative who comes in with the person every time. In other words, in comes a person to be processed, and you say, well, who's with you? And they say, well, Aunt Jane came down here. That's fine. Well, now your processing is going to cost so-and-so and so-and-so, and we're going to give you 75 hours, and that's fine. And what do you know? We're going to do you a big favor. We're going to give Aunt Jane 15 hours of processing. Oh, well, I don't know that she wants it. That has nothing to do with it. Well, can't pay for it. We didn't say a word about pay. Aunt Jane is going to get some processing, too. Well, I don't think she'll take it. Well, then you can't have any. Get that? Yet this person has no psychotic background. Their psychometrics are all right and everything else. It just happens that Aunt Jane came to town with them. You see why? I'll tell you why, basically, it's so that the environment, Aunt Jane, won't, when the pre-clears Anna-10 and hasn't quite flattened the process at the end of that particular session or something of the sort, won't be hammering and pounding and knocking and asking questions and kicking around and discussing and invalidating, you know? That's the least. And the other one is, just as all healers know, a family operates to a large degree on the same pattern. This happens often enough, not so that you can count on it, but so that you'd better include it as one of your data of calculation in a case. Somebody is having a rough time, well, then somebody in the vicinity, this somebody's probably having a rough time too. Now, on husband and wife teams, we do the same thing. Somebody comes in, a fellow comes in, he's just got to have some auditing for his wife. And he's doing all the arranging. He's talking to you, and you were doing the interview, and the wife is sitting there in the background, you know. You say, well, that's fine. Now, she'll require this many hours, you say, after you've talked to her, and this is all right, and so forth. And I've got a pal, another auditor, nice chap, just down the road, and he will give you some processing at the same time. I thought, well, I don't need auditing. I don't need anything like that. I'm perfectly sane. All this is insane. So she's the one's crazy in the family. No, that. You say, well, I know that, but you see, to assist the progress of her case and to assist her willingness to be audited, it is necessary that you go through the regimen, too. That won't hurt you a bit. Now, the funny part of it is, this is quite curious. The number of hours that you spend on this lady will be trebled or quadrupled in just trying to... You're not guaranteeing anything, you understand, but you do have a certain responsibility. If this person's power of choice on auditing is continually overthrown, this person's being invalidated and so forth, the number of hours in auditing is just going to be run on up. You might as well take right there at the beginning. You might as well charge enough so that you can hire another auditor to give you a hand. And you might as well charge enough just to the one case so that you process both of them, because you're going to have to anyhow. You're not going to solve the case. You're processing a group. And you should recognize when you're processing a group. And when you don't process the group, you very often get in trouble. Now, we even go to this extent now and then. We've learned that we have to do this. We know exactly what makes a squirrel. We can predict who is going to squirrel. It's going to be some perfectly good Scientologist, quite honest and sincere, who is up against somebody who is invalidating him all the time, is kicking apart his stable data. And sooner or later, we can predict that if we don't do something about the situation, that this perfectly good Scientologist is not only just going to worsen in his own character, but is going to cave in on the subject of Scientology and be sufficiently unstabilized and uncertain so that he will start to do halfway between. He sort of starts fighting Scientology and not fighting it. You get the idea? And he doesn't quite know what he's doing. He's upset. And yet various bonds of human relationship are such that by the mores of the race, he cannot break off this association to him. And there might be emotional attachments in this situation which are of great value to him. So he feels he needs these emotional attachments, even though they're kicking him to pieces and kicking his subject and his profession to pieces. You see this? So we can generally tell this business about squirreling. We can generally tell, given any squirrel anywhere, we can lay this down as a datum about that squirrel. This person has, right next to him, a person who, with whom he has emotional attachments, is knocking to pieces Scientology, or is calling it into question. And we know what will happen to this fellow. Now, we've had 5 years at this, and I've rooted this data out, and it's quite workable and quite usable. Right there, we will see a person unstabilize. He even gets processing, but he still unstabilizes. I recall a chap who was a psychologist, and a very good psychologist. He was a good psychometrist. He was a chap who could have designed a number of valuable tests and actually had been asked to design these tests. And he was a very good auditor. There was nothing wrong with this chap at all. And one fine day, he failed to turn in some of the tests and when they were due, and he all of a sudden a report came in that he'd given some of the darndest goofball processing you ever heard of to a pre-clear, and then the next thing you know, why, he was drunk down in the railroad station, and the cops had to bring him home in a car, and boy, this guy was having a rough time. And this was about the time, finally, I looked into this, because here was this fine chap with a wonderful background education in the field of the mind, able to be conversant with many fields. He was a good-looking man. And he was just knocked flat. And I looked into it. And I found that his wife used to keep him up till 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, raving and screaming at him of how he could put up with all this nonsense, you see. She was nuttier than a fruitcake. She had no background, nothing. She had nothing on which to base anything except this. She had evidently was afraid she would lose control of that man. He almost went by the boards. I had an interview with her, just wondering if something could be done about it. And she was real stupid. She was real stupid. She was nasty and mean throughout. And she told me she didn't care what happened to him as long as she kept him. She didn't tell me this in his hearing, though. Well, the oddity is that this one surrendered to processing. This was the first one where we actually had to take some cognizance of this factor. And we got him some processing by a little auditor who, I think he's out in California now, but this chap worked with that guy and worked with him and worked with him and finally got him exteriorized and got him in good shape in spite of this continued bombast. But it took him about 180 hours of processing, working uphill all the way as he was against the environment. He did win, see? He did win. And it then didn't result in a breakup of the marriage or anything like this, nothing like that. The fellow came up to a level of certainty which couldn't be unstabilized. And he had a much better look at things and a much better understanding of things. And this ranting and raving became very amusing to him. He wasn't putting it on as amusing, but all you had to do to send him off in a line charge, see, would be to start to run down Scientology in some fashion. He'd line charge right on the ground. He'd just start to laugh. And He thought his wife was being very funny. And although she practically knocked his head off a couple of times, and one day he had a cut cheek, he still thought it was funny. He thought that her inability to understand what she was doing and her insistence on doing it was uproariously amusing. And he wouldn't talk to her about the subject. When she'd keep at him too long, he couldn't restrain himself. He'd start laughing at her. And she came off of it. She came off of it. And applied for admission recently to an HCA school. When they get her in there, they'll break her back as far as her case is concerned, see. Because they know her history. This young chap was pretty well liked in the organization. Now, what would make somebody go off on such a kick? Somebody was objecting to the amount of attention he was giving something else. So here you must have a very attention-hungry person, you see. And this chap was all of a sudden interested in something else in existence, was talking to other people. And although he wasn't slighting his home particularly, he had a profession in which he was interested in. He would have found himself in equally that much, in the same trouble, equally that much trouble, if he'd been in the insurance business and become very successful in the insurance business. So he was walking around selling policies to everybody day and night and talking about the facts and figures and this and that, you see. He would have gotten the same treatment. He'd been knocked out of the insurance business, too. Why? Because he had slighted the attention which this person felt was her due. Now, it doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman. We get somebody who is actually a no-terminal, real energy hunger and that sort of thing, and they will just move heaven and earth to gain back any attention which is being, even no matter how momentarily, diverted to some other terminal than themselves. But there are no terminal. You can count at the same time that there's no backflow from that terminal in actual energy, encouragement, or anything on an ARC line. The fixation which the individual is doing, we never bother to elucidate to him. The mechanics of that, however, are interesting to behold. They are simply the mechanics of being pinned down by one's own energy. Just as one would stand staring at a vacuum, so he is liable to get pinned down in that situation. He considers it an emotional attachment or something of the sort. We don't care what it is. The point of the fact is that this has been a long, long thing. It's been something that has been around for thousands of years, and organizations have taken extraordinary means to do something about this. Extraordinary means. Call to your attention the monastery. This must have been a problem of such importance to the Roman Catholic Church that they could not permit their monks to be in association with any other person in a normal human relationship. But the church itself simply snatched them out of the society 100% and wouldn't let them have any further contact, which tells you at once that they couldn't lick this. Tells you that they were losing their good men. Tells you that they were being unstabilized as an organization by mechanisms of this character, and so they took these extraordinary means to remedy this. At certain times during training in fields of healing, there is a prohibition against marriage, against certain associations. These are means, too, to prevent somebody from unstabilizing. There are such regulations in various healing fields. It's quite interesting that this even goes to the length of regulating the early conduct of a witch doctor or a shaman. In very many tribes, they are not permitted a human relationship during their period of indoctrination at all, until, boy, are they inside the cult. See? All right. These extraordinary measures have evidently had behind them this same mechanism. And this mechanism is the mechanism by which we tailor make a squirrel. It's how we do it. See, we just get somebody, he's a good chap, he's doing all right, he's being successful one way or the other, but he has somebody back of him who is unstabilizing his data consistently and continually and without cessation, so that the individual himself becomes confused, and becoming more and more confused, new stable data can be run in on him of an aberrated nature. Let's take the mechanism by which a political organization, fairly well known in the world, works. Their motto is create chaos. That's their motto. The way they take over a country or something like that. Create all the chaos you can create. And then this political philosophy is thrown in as the stable datum into all this chaos. They make everything bad. They'd have no idea of propaganda. They just, with strikes and upsets of all kinds, they make everything bad and then throw in this stable datum of this political philosophy. And as dog-eared and as shabby as it is in workability, it's still better than no stable data. And so it's accepted by that country, and the political organization moves in. But their first and foremost action is to create chaos. Now, when an individual has chaos on an automaticity, you know, he's been so orderly so long, and chaos is so automatic, do you realize that he will eventually start to create unwittingly chaos? And that it could simply be a dramatization. After a while, all a person can create is chaos and is unable, incredibly unable, to create any order. He can only create chaos in somebody else. You see this? Well, all right, such a person is the type of person who would be next to the monk, the priest, the doctor, the Dionysus, the Scientologist, all of these categories have all had this same experience. It's the mechanism of the person who dramatizes chaos. Well, some people calculatingly make use out of this. They create enough chaos so that they themselves become the only stable datum. Now, this is a mechanism which goes on in the society, and it's not peculiar to Scientology. It's not peculiar to the Roman Catholic Church. It's just something that goes on. This is how terminals eat up other terminals when they're pretty aberrated. And it's just a mechanism, and we see this mechanism in human relationships, and so we take every possible precaution with regard to it. And one of the precautions is when we find a wife, we do this when we can. It's not always possible to do this. When we find a wife very interested, and we realize in time that somebody is not equally interested in her studying this, we can predict at once, if we look into this and find this other person is a bit savage and a bit sneering on the subject and so on, we can predict that our girl is going to do just fine for a little while, and then will skid, and herself become rather confused and upset. The business of living, in other words, has encroached upon her to an unbearable degree, in that her emotional attachments are being always overthrown, and she's being thrown into confusion. How do we answer this? We answer it where we can, by reaching out and grabbing by the ear this interbility person. We know, one, they're in bad condition, and two, that they will be resistant to auditing, and three, that in order to keep our Scientologists in good shape, we'll have to audit them. One of the ways we do this is when we discover such a husband and wife team out in the society. Somebody's been coming into the group, a fellow's been coming into the group, or a wife's been coming into the group, and everything's going along fine, and we realize they never bring anybody else. Just talk to them about it. What's your husband think about this? What's your wife think about this? Well, bring him over to the group next time. You have a talk with him. Get the idea? Otherwise, you're going to blow the marriage up. You're going to mismatch the terminals. You're going to blow up a Scientologist. There's several things that might occur, you see. So in the interest of keeping peace, why, for heaven's sakes, do something about the majority of terminals in that group that you can lay your hands on. Not that you want to make them all into Scientologists, that you've got to, that you obsessively have to have everybody in this town Scientologists, but it's kind of nice to have a group which is calm. It's kind of nice to have a group where everybody's friendly and everybody's getting the show on the road and we're all doing fine. It's kind of bum, all of a sudden, to have a girl who was just fine right up to a certain point go over to the other side of town and open up a group that is reading and studying some ism and has got Scientology combined with it in some fashion and start spinning people that your group now has to pick up, and you have to work away against that. You see what's happened? You just were a little bit slow, as we have very often been slow in grabbing this situation, because at any time along the line you could have done something about it if you wanted to invest a little time. All right, now let's look at that from our own most intimate viewpoint, and then let's look a little further. In comes this girl to be audited. You had certainly better find out the human relationships of this person. It is a difficult thing to do anything for this case, unless you do something with this case's most intimate terminals. Now, the funny part of it is, if you're running a group, it's not too hard to do that. If we have adequate texts, which are simple, if our goals are fairly well stated, and if some of our stable data is lying there in good, plain sight, so that somebody can pick it up and look it over and speculate on it a little bit, we win rather easily. It isn't really necessary to give him 75 hours because you gave her 75 hours or something. But if we pay some attention to this and take some provisions of this, run a group, have some people around that can talk to them, if we have simple enough brochures, been my fault that these have not really been compiled. We're taking every possible step we can take right this minute to compile these. Why? You know, you'll have a rather smooth time of it. And this factor of progress and then half spin, and then some more progress and half spin in the course of auditing a preclear, will slow down to a walk. It will become a much more stable progress, you see. And you yourself, by doing something about the other terminal or terminals, have saved that much time in auditing the case. And the gain you will make is significantly greater. So for 25 or 75 hours, you'll give them a lot more than you would give them otherwise. And that's why some of the cases are hanging fire. It isn't case trouble at all. It's environment trouble. We all knew this. Now, one of the things I've been working toward with great thoroughness has been making a case progress faster than the environment could kick it to pieces. That's been a very important thing, and there's been a lot of attention on that. All right, and we are winning. We're always winning a little bit more one way or the other, but as I said at the beginning of this lecture, halfway through an ACC, we generally have aligned enough data and thought about this enough so that we have a more hopeful look about processes. And I can give you right now a clue as to future processes, and I've already mentioned this in several other earlier lectures, but I just want to point this up to you, that improvement of the power of choice leading to an improvement of decision, leading to an improvement of postulate. See, there's a little gradient scale there. Power of choice is about as low as you can enter it, and still is it. It might be a little bit lower than that. But right now, power of choice at the lowest part of this scale that we are now talking about, just above this would be decision, the power to decide, not just to make a choice, but to decide forthrightly. In other words, to forecast the future a bit by a decision. See, still taking into account other factors, but make a decision about these things. Be decisive, in other words. Above this comes postulates. And one can postulate the environment or the future if he goes upscale in that fashion. So we have our foot in the door on a new little ladder, which is liable to be a very neat, handy little ladder, practically in Jacob's ladder. Go straight to him, or straight to Stable Theta Clear, anyhow. We sometimes rehabilitate a case, but not too much his power of choice. We make him more able in handling things, but we do not make him too much more able in choosing things. We remedy his mass, in other words. We remedy his space. We remedy his perception, and then leave it in the lap of the gods. Now, if we can do well enough with an individual's power of choice, if we can improve this adequately and sufficiently, why, we are then able, let us say, to better proof the case against sudden incursions and confusions from the environment. And if we can do this, then this factor becomes less important that the individual is going back into a re-stimulating environment. It becomes less important that this individual has, as an opposite terminal, somebody who is angry and upsetting on the subject of something he likes, you see. Now, anybody has a right to have a game, by the way. Anybody has a right to have a game. And where one individual has a slightly new game, people who can't change their game or have no game at all are liable to be very upsetting to them. So the very least you would do for an individual is make it possible for him to have a better game and to better be oriented in his general business of livingness. And to regulate those factors in his environment which do not seem to be able to regulate themselves. In other words, improve his control of his environment. You improve his power of choice on all dynamics, you understand. And so this squirrel factor that I have mentioned is an important thing to look at, but it's more important to realize that its direction of solution lies in improvement of power of choice, and above that, improvement of decision, and above that, ability to postulate. And if one's power of choice improves, one's control of the environment will perforce improve. But an understanding of this requires that an individual have better tolerance of not knowingness, tolerance of motion, and a tolerance of motionlessness, and particularly a tolerance of this thing we call confusion, or a tolerance of lack of confusion. You know, total lack of confusion is no game. Did you realize that? That's no game at all. All right. We have our six levels of processing. they are very, very useful. They are producing the results where they should produce them. We have expanded these slightly. We've gone a little bit further south, right while this unit's been in progress, and that's fine. But we have discovered, more importantly, an articulation of those things necessary to good auditor presence and good auditor results. And here, under training, we have learned, I am sure, a great deal more about auditing. We just put it on the basis of starting a session and handling a present-time problem and running a process and building communication bridges. And right there, this alone is a considerable gain in auditing skill. But there is a further skill. There is a further skill than this, and that is almost a case skill. It's almost a rehabilitated skill. And it seems to be very necessary for an auditor to be able to tolerate not knowingness. Otherwise, he's quite upset at the stupidity of his half anatend preclear. There sits the preclear looking through the fog. And the auditor is saying, he doesn't see that. Boy, is he stupid. That's right. Absolutely right. Auditor standing in the clear, the preclear's in the fog. All right, the auditor has to be able to tolerate somebody being in the fog. He also has to tolerate somebody being confused on a subject. He also has to tolerate somebody being motionless on a subject. You see? And he also has to tolerate not only his own powers of choice and the consequences thereof, but he has to let somebody else make a choice too, without any cave-in on his own. In other words, he has to be proofed up pretty well on all of these subjects, the keynotes, what I'm talking about. He has to be proofed up pretty well in order to have a good and adequate understanding of his preclear, and to never at any time get upset by auditing, and to always produce a good result. Now, I've given you a lot of random data here, such as how to handle a few special breeds of cat in cases, and so on, which I think you'll find useful. But I'm just trying to show you that we must produce better results until such time as we produce such results in one session that an individual never becomes re-stimulatable by his immediate environment. And if we do that, we have put the individual into control of his environment at once before returning him into his environment, and we will have won for sure. But this is almost an impossible goal, you know. This is one of these fantastic goals. All right, let's make the fellow an operating thetan in an hour. Might take us longer than that to get where we could talk to him a little bit, you know. Nevertheless, we can't throw away the fact that there is some vague, if highly improbable, chance of achieving such a level. But until we do achieve such a level, we work with the tools which we have. We work with the tools with which we have familiarity and surety. And we do what we can within the level of reality. We don't start shooting the moon in the middle of the session. We work with what we have when we have it. Now, the later part of your training on this unit may be a little bit unstabilized, just to the degree that we take up and study and look at these other factors. But I wish to tell you here and now that we're not departing from the six levels of processing. We're sure of those. On these other things, we have nothing but a vast gulf of speculation. And all of man has fallen into a gulf of speculation. We are some of the few who have decided to make known ground known and usable and use it while we still look ahead and speculate. So just because we're speculating, don't think we've gone off the cliff. We haven't. We're still running the six levels of processing. We're doing it just as it's been laid down with its various levels up the line, and you are perfectly at liberty to use those. While you're using those, look at this other information too, because at the end of this unit, these six levels may have served only to teach you how to audit well, and you may have at the end of that time a process lineup which is doing 10 times the work that we are doing right now. But don't count on it. We know what we can do. Be content with that for the moment. Thank you.